This What's Working with Cam Marston podcast is brought to you courtesy of Michelob Ultra Beer.
They say consistency is the key to success. They weren't wrong. So how about grabbing a beer that's consistently smooth, consistently refreshing, and consistently light? You might just find that the road to success can be pretty enjoyable. Michelob Ultra, the perfect balance of taste and refreshment, and only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Enjoy responsibly. Anheuser-Busch Michelob Ultra Light Beer, St. Louis, Missouri.
Welcome, everyone, to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. I'm so happy you're along for this show. Thank you for listening in. What's Working is the show designed to bring you the workplace, the workforce, and the marketplace trends shaping the workplace, the workforce, and the marketplace around us. My goal is to find guests that can teach us something that we can apply that will make each of us a little bit better at whatever it is that we do. Again, welcome. Glad to have you along for the ride. Once we come back from the break, I'm going to have Alan Clark on the line with me. He's currently chairman of the board for DSI Security Services. They're based in Dothan, Alabama. Their growth over the years has been explosive. 5,400 employees now in 33 states. They're the 11th largest security company in the United States. And I'm eager to talk to him about how he did it, how he and his family, it's a family-owned business, how they did it. And he is the July 2023 Business Alabama feature What's Working interview of the month. We've got a relationship with Business Alabama, where I work with Alec Harvey at the magazine to go in depth with one of the guests or one of the people featured in the magazine so we can kind of go a little bit deeper. And I'm grateful for this relationship with Business Alabama. And Alec sends me, always has great recommendations for the guests that he feels like, hey, we did this story, but there's so much more to this. And he sends me those people. Again, when we come back from the break, we'll have Alan Clark on the line. Looking forward to that conversation. I know at some point in his business, he experienced, likely, as so many businesses do, an extraordinary question of, do I take this leap forward? All businesses seemingly want to grow. But there are decisions that you have to make along the way that put you in an uncomfortable position. You take on debt, you risk your reputation, and you risk failure in the eyes of those people who you share your aspirations with. And I remember one of the pieces of advice that I was given early in my career that I have frankly done a poor job of following is you set your goals. You determine where it is you want to be, how you're going to get there, and you don't tell a whole lot of people. Because when you tell a whole lot of people, you risk having to admit to them that they didn't work out. I am very good at setting goals and then blabbing them, posting them, whatever it may be. And the show is undergoing this a similar conundrum right now. We've got some wonderful opportunities in front of us, and I'm not going to go into detail on them. But there's got to be some discomfort, as there is with this show, some questioning, some growing pains, and how long will the growing pains last? And I'm very interested in Alan giving me some insight in that when we come back. Alan is one of the many people who I'd love to continue to enjoy meeting through the show. Without a doubt, one of the highlights of doing this, and I've said this so many times before to use those of you who are regular listeners, one of the highlights of doing this is meeting the people who I get to meet. And some of them I meet in person here in the studio. Some of them, as I will with Alan, it's over a Zoom call, but I feel a connection with them when it's over. Maybe they don't, but I do. And I become firmly in their corner, champions of their business because of the time and the energy and the thoughts that they've given. And I'm surprised, and Alan is one of many people that I want to meet and get to know. The list is long. More and more people are accepting the invitations to be on this show than used to. I think the reputation is getting out. The growth is becoming more and more visible in the numbers that we use to measure the show. But the point I'm trying to make is, I guess every day, I probably get three emails from some organization that's trying to pitch me a guest for my show. and the email is done by some PR marketing firm, and there's a long list of accolades, of superlatives, of why this guest would be perfect for my show. And the emails are getting more sophisticated. They are mentioning specific episodes of my show, of this show, of what's working, and it makes me think, how are they doing that? And I'm wondering if this is not AI. Artificial intelligence has now come into the marketing of people to get on the show. I'm wondering. Anyway, when we come back, I'll have Alan Clark on the line with me, chairman of the board for DSI Security Services, this month's Business Alabama interview. You're listening to What's Working. Be right back.
Think about how people really see you. The kid at the drive-thru just sees a coffee drinker.
Please pull forward.
Your local barista sees the person who loves a smiley face in their latte.
See you next time.
It's kind of the same way with insurance. Other insurance companies just see a customer, but a State Farm agent sees more. They see you as a neighbor. Your State Farm agent is here to get to know who you really are so they can help life go right.
Call me, State Farm agent Allison Horner in Mobile at 666-1616.
Hey, this is Cam Marston. My What's Working radio show has given me a front row seat to what's going on in today's workplace and workforce. I'm taking what I've learned and delivering it as a live presentation. If your company, team, or association is looking for a speaker to kick off or wrap up your event, check out my presentations at my website, cammarston.com, or find me on YouTube to watch some sample videos. You can expect actionable and relevant content delivered with lots of humor. On my site, you can find my client list and testimonials. I welcome your calls and your emails. Reach out. Let's find a way to deliver fresh, thought-provoking, actionable content to your event.
We're back. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. Again, thank you for joining me. On the other side of a Zoom call is Alan Clark. He's currently the chairman of the board for DSI Security Services. I'll read a little bit from his bio and pick and choose as we go through the show. DSI Security Services is one of the largest privately held security companies in the United States, currently the 11th largest security company in the USA, with over 5,400 employees in 33 states. Alan, thank you for your time. Welcome to What's Working.
Cam, glad to be here. Thank you.
Folks that are listening in, I'm going to tell you the truth, not try to hide behind what I just did, and I want to compliment Alan as we go through. Since this is a Zoom call, we record it, and I take the audio from the Zoom recording to create the radio show. Alan and I were halfway through the first segment when I realized I hadn't hit the record button. So if Alan and I already sound somewhat familiar with one another, it's because we've been talking already. Alan, again, I'm sorry. It's egg all over my face. I try to be a professional, but I just got to admit the mistakes that I made. Tell me a little bit about DSI Security Services. Let's begin with how the company began one more time.
Was that the first mistake you've ever made, Cam?
Oh, gosh. It's not, but it's not the first impression I want to make on somebody like you. I'll tell you the last sentence of his bio. He's currently a member of the University of Alabama's President's Cabinet. And the last impression that I want to make on somebody of this stature is Marston can't hit the record button.
Yeah, my father was sheriff of Houston County, Dothan, Alabama, back in the 60s, the 70s, and 80s, Farley Nuclear Plant, Alabama Power, was building a nuclear facility, a nuclear plant here in our county. And Daniel Construction Company came to my father. At the time, there was not a security company here in our area. Came to my father and asked him to help them put together a security team for construction at the facility there in outside of Dothan. So that's how we got started. He put together a former law enforcement guy, current law enforcement people together to put a security team together.
And that was the first customer protecting the nuclear power plant.
Right. During construction, my father hired a manager over that facility, and he started getting that a little bit. Our second account was a place called Sunnyland Foods. They were a pork plant. Kill plant, pork plant. And then we had our second client was a company called Ansel. They made latex gloves and latex products with our second account. When I got home in 1977, that's who we had at our facilities, and a couple McDonald's on weekends, that type stuff.
So your father was a retired sheriff. He created the security company. You got home from college, I believe, in 1977, class of 1977. Was it your intention upon graduation to become a member of the still very young new family company?
Well, kind of sort of where I was going to help. We had a manager. I was going to help him. We had a farm that I was going to help out with too. Just about a month after I started helping out with the company, our manager at the time left the company, so I was kind of thrown to the wolves and had to run it from not knowing very much what was going on. I had to learn the hard way, just hard knocks, just get up and go do it.
And you have two sons in the business now, if I understand correctly, and which makes them third generation family business.
Right. Boyd is 43 next in September, and he's our vice president of sales and marketing. My son Devers is 38. He is vice president of operations. They're totally separate. Let me say this, Cam. They're like night, you know, the same mother and father, like night and day.
Yeah.
One's a more marketing guy. Devers is a accounting degree, an MBA out of Alabama. So he's a more of an operational guy. So they work together as a team and plus other people. But it's been a blessing, really has.
Was it there, your son's intention to become a part of the family business upon their entry into the workplace?
I told both of them when they went to the University of Alabama, I said, y'all can, there's not much here. If you want to come back and be a part of it, you got to come back and be, there's no fat here to live off the land. You got to come back and make it, push it to another level. And they have and are doing that.
And is that how it's expanded into the 33 different states? Is that your sons have been responsible for that? Or was that happening prior to them joining the company?
Well, as of a month ago, I have a guy who's been with us 33 years, Eddie Sorrells. He is as of July 1st, our president. He actually started as a security officer at his daddy was the district attorney in our county. Eddie's daddy called me, Tom Sorrells called me 33 years ago and said that Eddie needs a job. He's just finished high school and went to Troy University in Dothan and needs a job. And I said to myself, he won't last a week. He worked 3 years as a security officer at a Sony plant here in town. Started going to college and moving up. We moved him up in positions. He went to law school, Jones Law School in Montgomery.
Yeah.
He's now our president and fantastic job. We got good folks. Like I said, but our growth at CAM has really come from organic growth. I bought a small company in Montgomery like 30 years ago, but most of our growth has come from other companies saying, you want to go to Tennessee or you want to go to California. Our growth has been organic that way.
So as the facilities that you provide security for grow, expand, as the companies that run or own those facilities or are working within those facilities expand, they come to you to say, hey, we're growing to Tennessee. Can you grow with us to Tennessee?
We have sales, people get out and call on facilities, clients, what it may be. And for example, we do all of BMW, the car manufacturer's business, all the country. We've had their contract for 5 years. Started 5 years ago, as of January 1st, we're starting another 8 years with them.
Wow.
We got their business and they're in California. So they push us to California, New York, New Jersey. And what we've done from that, we've grown those markets. We were not in California 6 years ago, but BMW pushed us out there. And what we do is set up handling that business. We hire people to grow that market for us. That's how we've grown our business.
Yeah. At some point, Alan, there must have been an inflection point of what do I do now? Let me introduce you to my listener, if you will, and then I'll ask you this question. My show is designed to kind of cultivate, and I use that term a little loosely, a influencer in their workplace. He or she can be the boss, the CEO. They could be third generation family business, as your sons would be, or they could manage a small team for a landscape company. But they're people who have the ability and many the responsibility of growth, of change, etc. And they come to this show for insights into what they themselves can do in their day-to-day work. So to the question, at some point in your past, there must have been an inflection point around growth of how are we going to do this? Fear, uncertainty. And in my opening comments, which you weren't on the line for, but in my open comments, my radio show, the show that you're a part of right now, is in that zone right now. What are we going to do? What did you do when you hit this inflection point? How did you manage it? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, you said fear, and I'm motivated by the fear of failure, and I guess I've always had that a bad trait, I guess, but the fear of failure had always motivated me to get out and make sure, because you are going to lose some contracts. You know, you may have a contract with, for instance, Farley nuclear plant during construction. That went away. That was going to go away. Eventually, we knew that because we were, you know. So the fear of failure motivated me to get out and pursue more business. And when you do that, in my opinion, you open the door for many other avenues of opportunities out there, what I'm saying. You know, it's like, I'm going to ramble here for a second. When I was at the University of Alabama, me and another friend of mine bought a pinball machine to put in our fraternity. And I'm not a pinball player, but one pinball machine. And then we had five pinball machines because people saw what we were doing. Then people come to us with other ideas, knew we were kind of entrepreneurs, I guess, more or less. And they came to us saying, you want to do this, you want to do that. So to me, my philosophy, and I'm going to philosophize for it, Cam. I always use a replica of a Bryant Denny Stadium as my, I got one in our office. And I use that as my opinion about life. I think everybody has an opportunity in life to excel whatever they may be doing. I think some people never see it. I think some people see it and not, are too scared to grasp it. And the third category of people who see their opportunity and go both feet into it and make it work, you know. But there's again, people who see their opportunities in life, potential opportunity, and don't see it, ones who see it and are scared to dive into it. And the third category is the one who's like you, jump into it. You're doing what you're doing now. Jump into it both feet and make it work. And there's good times and there's bad times. I don't care what you say, what you do. There's times you wish you hadn't done it. There's most of the time you glad you did do it.
So and this is embodied for you with a replica of Bryant Denny Stadium.
Yes.
Tell me more about that. Why that replica?
I use it as the football players on the field or that third category. They're the people that they're making things. They've taken the risk. They're busting their rear end to make things work. The people in the stands are there watching. They watch it. They're part of it. And there's people outside that walk by the stadium when the football game's going on, oblivious what's going on. They just walk by. There's nothing. They don't know. So that's kind of a weird way of my expression of life. You know, people don't see their opportunities. Don't even notice them. Ones that notice them and are scared to pursue it. The third one are on the field playing the ball game. You know.
Alan, I absolutely love it. It's a great metaphor. It's go time for those kids on the field. We're going to go to break right now and come back. And I want to learn a little bit more about what types of companies need your services, because certainly there's someone out there listening who's thinking about it. You're listening to What's Working. We'll be right back.
Paul Lewis, General Manager of Roy Lewis Construction. Many of our commercial buildings you drive by daily on both sides of the bay are the fruits of our client relationships since our beginning in the early 80s. It is our mission to bring value to our clients, from retrofits to ground-up construction and everything in between. We have more advocates than any of our competitors who have been in business twice as long. Same with repeat business, same with referrals. Find us online at roylewisconstruction.com and let's talk about your next commercial project.
Customer service never goes out of style. In fact, I think it's safe to say that customer service is more valuable and more important now more than ever. Hi, this is Cam Marston. One thing that my over 200 episodes of What's Working has taught me is how important customer service is to building and maintaining a thriving business. It's the growing need for customer service that's led me to partner with one of the state's leading customer service trainers to create our program called Delivering 5-Star Customer Service. Your team will get one 90-minute training session per month for 6 consecutive months. Each session builds on the skills learned the previous month, allowing your customer-facing teams to practice before moving on to the next lesson. And the 6 lessons address everything from appearance to electronic communications to conflict resolution to maintaining a service mindset. Our program travels and is delivered in person at your workplace, nothing virtual. You simply can't practice the level of the skills this course teaches virtually. For more information, email me, cam@cammarston.com, and let's schedule a time to talk. Remember, you have less to fear from outside competition than you do from discourtesy and bad service from inside your own company. Again, email me, cam@cammarston.com, and let's talk about your business. I'm Cam Marston. You're listening to What's Working. On the other side of a Zoom call from me right now is Alan Clark. He's the chairman of the board for DSI Security Services. Alan has 47 years of experience in the security industry, 43-year member of ASIS, a member of NASCO. These are all, I think, industry associations, but he's also the member of the Business Council of Alabama and a member of ISMA, the International Security Management Association. Alan, just prior to the break, we were talking about who needs your services. So tell me a little bit about, there's somebody out there listening going, I feel like we're vulnerable, but I don't know what I need. Tell me what the profile of your customer is.
Well, there's a bunch of categories, but you know, we originally started, Cam, we manned manufacturing facilities, or a McDonald's on weekends, or a plant that has employees that needs control. We control the access to their facility. That's where our majority of our business is. We are in the electronics division. Because it's changed so much, but our primary business was, like I said, was controlling access to a facility. So anyone who has a facility that wants access control, whether it's personnel or electronics, we do both. Our electronics division is a vital part of our business now more than ever, and continuing to grow because of the world we live in today. For employees trying to find people to work. The electronics division, part of our business, is really taken off gangbusters.
Yeah. Tell me, Alan, the last 5 guests on this show, when I talk to them about various things, something that always comes up is their struggle to find employees. Are you all struggling to find labor, talent, people?
Cam, it's like, I've been doing this, like you said, 47 years, never seen anything like this ever. We've had pockets of our markets. Tampa is always a difficult market, and some areas aren't. I've never seen in the last 2 years the labor market like it is. Every market we got, it's like COVID came on and like a switch was turned off. Like, where do the people go? All of a sudden, you can't find people to work. Yeah, we have that problem. It's a constant process to hire people, quality people who can do the work we need them to do.
With 5,400 employees in 33 U.S. states, what are you coming across in terms of ideas for keeping these 5,400 people? Have you developed new incentives? Have you done anything new to drive retention higher?
Well, you're right. We have. In the last 6 months to a year, it's gotten better for us. People applying for jobs. Now, our focus now is to keep those people, whether it's wages big, vacation, benefits, 401k, those things that we have to offer to get people to stay. Also, recognition programs like Officer of the Month, Employee of the Month. Someone does something above and beyond board, we send them a certificate with a gift card. We tried everything in the world to try to keep people. Right now, that is our focus. If we know that we can keep someone, if we get someone to work for us and stay 3 months, most likely they'll stay a year. That's the process. Last couple of years have been very, very difficult for everyone, I think.
Oh, it's everyone. It's everyone. Everyone that I've spoken to is struggling with the same thing. Regardless what the industry, the business, the job, the title, everybody seems to be struggling with this. So you said something that I've heard one of our guests say in the past, and which is, if I can keep these people in my business for three months, they're more likely to stay for a year. And if they stay for a year, they're much more likely to become a lifer. And what he, this gentleman that I'm quoting here, attributed the... What he tried to do is develop a very powerful company culture. And I hear that more today than I've ever heard before. The influence and the power, the retention that comes out of a very strong, positive company culture. His company, though, is not broadcast, is not spread over 33 states. How do you guys push a positive, supportive culture across 33 states? That's got to be hard.
We have a Monday morning meeting with all of our managers and for an hour every Monday morning at 9 o'clock. All the calls are pushing our. It's all about good people, Ken. I don't care. You win football games with good players. Just coaches help, no doubt about that. But you win with good players. I don't care what you say. So our goal is constantly to find good people. I don't care what you do. I preach it every day. Good people win. Marginal people, you got marginal people, you got a marginal company. You got good people, you got a good company. Like I said, Eddie Sorrell's been with me 33 years. Our COO has been with us 25 years. I know I'm talking about management, but you got to start there. In my job, to me, it's people. Everybody will be wanting, needing, accepted. So our goal is to make sure our officers. Everybody in our company wanted, needed, accepted. Everybody know that we want them, need them, and we accept them the way they are. We need a job done, but recognition and I always tell people, your birthday is the biggest, usually the biggest day of your life. I don't care what you say. May 16th, my birthday. If someone sends me a text or that makes me feel good. Am I right? Everybody, that's a big thing. So we try to do that kind of stuff. Recognize that person on their birthday, a card, a text, or just what it may be to recognize people. We try to do the little things that I say, that's a big thing. Little things that make people feel important. And it's hard. As you grow, it's harder, no doubt.
Wanted, needed, and accepted. Everybody wants to be wanted, needed, and accepted. And if I understand you correctly, Alan, you try to provide these things to each of your employees. And when you do that, the culture of retention is impacted. Is that correct?
I think so. I mean, it's like advertising, there's all kind of advertising out there. I tell people all the time, Coca-Cola spends, I'm sure, millions of dollars, maybe billions of dollars a year on advertising on TV. But also you go to a downtown area of Dothan and see a bench on the street with a Coca-Cola sign behind it. Or you see those styrofoam cups you got with Coca-Cola all over. So you got to start. You don't know what works totally. So you got to do a little all of it. Make sure everybody gets, whatever it may be, just make
right.
it work.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes comes out of Coca-Cola. One of the CEOs, only 50% of our advertisement works, he said, but we have no idea which 50% it is.
Right.
Which is a painful admission from his part. Alan, I got a couple other questions here for you. Many questions, frankly, but you said good people. Good people makes the company. Mediocre people, you'll find a mediocre company. Define for me good people. There's somebody out there listening right now saying, he's right, good people make good companies. But what is a good person? How do I know them when I find them?
A resume, you don't always know. It's a shot in the dark when you hire people. You look at a resume all day long, you put anything you want to in that resume, you check it out, but you want to. Let me put it this way. We have electronics division. I'll use that because they're technical people. We got into the electronics part of this thing 20, 25 years ago. I have never had a client call me and tell me that so-and-so is the best technician they've ever seen, or he or she knows more about putting a camera in than I've ever seen. Everything I've gotten is that's the nicest person, polite, helpful. No one's ever written, I use this all the time, nobody's ever written me and told me that so-and-so is, that guy knows more about security than I've ever met. It's always politeness, doing your job, I always tell people, you can, I can be at a door. It's your office. I can have, you may tell me, Alan, I don't want anyone in that, in this room. I'm going to put a guard right there. Well, you can put that officer there and someone can walk up to the door and you can just knock them out with your fist before they walk in the door. Or you can say, sir, you're not allowed in that room, you know, and you explain to them why. Your cop is the same thing. But, you know, so we try to say, you know, be polite, nice. Again, no one's ever written me and said that this guy or this lady is a security professional. They're nice, polite, helpful. You know, went out of the way to help me. That's what I'm talking about, those type of people.
Those type of people. It's less in the technical skills and more in the interpersonal skills.
I mean, you got to have the technical skills. You got to be able to do your job.
Yeah.
That's mandated, but you can also do it in a nice way. I tell people all the time, and we are in the service industry. I can take bad food in a restaurant. I can't take bad service. You know, yeah. I can understand sometimes food is not perfect, not burnt, what it may be, but I can't take that person serving me being rude about it. I just don't do that to me, you know.
Give me a sense of who your customers are, Alan. I don't think we talked about that as much. And how there's somebody out there listening who's saying, I may need a security service. I don't know. What is the definition? At what point can I self-secure versus needing some outside help?
Yeah, we do a lot of manufacturing. We do a lot of like BMW. We do a lot of transportation, AAA Cooper Transportation, logistics company. We do a lot of hospitals all the country. We do I was in Jacksonville, Florida yesterday with a big shipper. We do a lot of shipping, a lot of port work, a lot of ships. We got the Port of Miami. There's three large shipping companies down in the Port of Miami. We do two of them right now that bring product from all over China, all the world here, back and forth. We do Class A buildings in Birmingham. Like I say, we do a little all that. We don't do bars. We don't do retail. We don't do shoplifting stuff. We don't do work in a mall and say, you know, shoplifting or a store. Anything besides that, we do. We don't do bars. Bars we do not do. But we do, you know, like I say, Class A buildings, high rises, manufacturing, logistic companies, trucking companies that product, little all of it.
Yeah, little all of it. So I'm taking that these security people that are following Taylor Swift on and off the stage are not a part of your team. That's somebody else. That's interpersonal security.
Well, we do some concert type stuff, but yes, no, we don't. Normally, that's not what we do. Yes.
Yeah. We'll be right back after this break. I'm on the line with Alan Clark, DSI Security. You're listening to What's Working.
At Roy Lewis Construction, we're in the business of adding value. Whether it's working with you to meet your unique business needs or making investments in our community in lasting ways, providing unparalleled value and quality in every commercial construction project. When planning your next commercial project, reach out to Roy Lewis Construction. We'll pair you with a designer that best suits your project needs and work with that designer to balance the best architectural outcome with the best budget outcome. Find us online at roylewisconstruction.com, building legacies one relationship at a time.
You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. I'm currently in the middle of a conversation with Alan Clark. He's the chairman of the board for DSI Security Services based in Dothan, Alabama. They have 5,400 employees in 33 states and currently the 11th largest security company in the United States. Alan, one of the kind of signatures of the show these days is the 10 questions that I sent you in advance that we kind of the purpose of them is to, we want to hear about the company, we want to kind of get to know you in relation to the company, but these 10 questions are designed to get to know you a little bit more in a different and interesting way. So, very curious of your answer to some of these questions in particular. We'll start with one of my favorites, which is number one, what is your favorite business book?
Acres of Diamonds. When I got your email about these questions, I've read quite a few business books, but Acres of Diamonds, be honest with you, Cam, is not really a business book, but it is and it isn't. It was written in 1843. I look it up. I think it's a very short book. And basically, what's about, in a nutshell, it's about in Africa, it's about a family who owned land that was pretty successful, and the diamond industry had gotten real big, and the people, this owner of this land had heard about diamonds all over the world, but diamonds making money, a lot of money, you know. This guy was pretty successful. He sold his land to pursue the diamond industry, and he found out, whoever bought it, found out that it had the largest diamond mine in the world on it, on his land. He pursued to go somewhere else. I guess I use that as that whatever you have, he said, what's that going to do with business? Well, it has a lot to do with business to me. Whatever you have, whether it's a radio show or a security company, maximize what you have. You know, make sure what you're, sometimes we want to think it's easier, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. This guy had the largest diamond mine in the world in Africa. This is a true story, supposedly. Mm-hmm. But he pursued, he didn't research what he already had to maximize what he had. He went looking for that, but he already had it right there in front of him.
Under his feet.
Under his feet. Had the largest diamond mine in the world. So you say, what's that got to do with business? I don't, well, it motivates me to say, Alan Clark, whatever you have, a security company, maximize what you have. Never stop researching it, making it better, because you got to continue to make, you can be successful for a year, 2 or 3 years, but times change. I look at people like Kodak, people like companies like that who just went out of business.
Right.
Never would have thought that would happen. I mean, but they didn't keep up with technology. They didn't, I don't know what the reason why, but they did not. So whatever you have business-wise in your own backyard, maximize what you got. That's my favorite book. It's a little book called Acres of Diamonds.
Acres of Diamonds. And it sounds like it's a golden oldie, not a new wavy thing, but some genuine evergreen advice.
Right.
All right, next question. And I've written that down. That's curious. Particularly, it's interesting to me, particularly because you said it was short.
Real short. Really, probably 30 minutes.
What one trend in the marketplace excites you about your business?
Technology.
Ooh, interesting.
Technology changes so quickly. And it goes back, I'll say a while ago, about the labor market, the personnel market, is finding people is so difficult in all industries, that technology is kind of a way of together. In other words, we can have two gates at a facility, at a plant, two gates, man gates. And, you know, this day and time, you have one man gate and the other gate manned by a camera. What that guy can control both gates. Mash a button, open the gate. Camera can show, like we're doing right now, cams at the gate. I see cam here. You show me your ID. I can push the button, open the gate. I can watch everything you're doing there and shut the gate. So technology is changing so rapidly.
And so many people, Alan, are intimidated by this rapid change of technology. You're not intimidated. You're excited about it.
Excited about it. It's changing. It really is.
What one trend in the marketplace worries you?
Labor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's saying that. I still, it's better. It's really a lot better. But we still got, like I said, trying to get people hired and keeping them. It seems like the work ethic to me is not, well, I know it's not like it used to be. It's I think, and I'm going to ramble here for a minute. I think we got a lot of minimalists out there, more than you think. I think there's people, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not bashing that. I think there's people out there who want to make a living, go home, and not have a boat, a beach house, a lake house, or they want to live. And that's fine. I'm not bashing that. But I think there's more people out there than we really think, that really don't want anything more than just the basics of life.
Yeah, they're happy not achieving.
That's right. Exactly right. Nothing wrong with that. That's what they want to do. They're underachievers, and in our world, that's fine. But there's more out there than I think there are. We think
there
are.
I think you may be right, and I have some clients that have talked about that. One in particular comes to mind is the boat manufacturing industry. They're worried that for years, having a beautiful boat in the dock, the marina, or in the driveway was a status symbol. They're worried that the next generation may not want that. They want access to the boat, but they don't want to own it. They want to use it one weekend, two weekends a year, which prevents them from wanting to own it. And it's similar to what you're saying, is lack of desire to own the quality things in life, and just being, as you, to use your term, a minimalist. So one trend in the marketplace that worries you, you said labor. What is the biggest business mistake you've ever made?
I thought about this. I know I made plenty out of them. I guess not hiring the right person. The biggest mistakes I do make is not hiring the right. My gut feeling says don't do it. I should not do it. I made some bad investments. I guess I've invested in stuff that didn't work out. So I guess one of the biggest mistakes I made with our own company is not being maybe not pushing myself hard enough to go forward. The fear part. I call myself a calculated risk taker. I'm not being like a Freddie Smith who started Federal Express, who flew out to Las Vegas with his little money and it worked. But am I that kind of person? Probably not.
Yeah.
But where's my level of what I would do to make the business work? So
you sound like a very, very self-aware guy, Alan. You know who you are. You know what you're good at. You kind of measure your thoughts very calculated, in a very calculated way.
That comes with age, right, Cam? I think that comes with age a little bit, right?
Maybe you're right. Yeah. How about your favorite news source for business content?
I read a lot of stuff, but I watch a lot of, I like this guy named Charlie Payne with Fox Business. I watch the business shows on your cable news networks a lot during lunch and at night. But I like those type shows. This guy, Charlie Payne, I like him. I don't know why I pick him per se, but I like to listen. We have a group of guys in Dothan that we meet once a month, and about six guys that we meet, and we talk different professions, retired road businesses, and just different bankers. We meet in my office, and we talk about business, and even the guy who owns one of the guys owns a service station here. We all see different levels of the economy. So I love to hear what's going on out there from your perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
I listen to Fox Business, Making Money, Charles Payne. Well, I listen to a lot.
I've made that note. This is very helpful to me asking these questions. From which generation do you wish you had more employees?
I'm a boomer, I guess. I don't mean it to be negative, but it seems like the boomers were a good, and we got more since then. The boomers were, you're not seeing a lot of that anymore right now. It's weird to me. You're not seeing a lot of retired people in our industry. I don't know where they're gone, but they were pretty stable. They may have worked as a law enforcement officer, retired, want to work more. There's not as many out there they used to be, in my opinion. But I said the boomers.
Yeah, I think, and this is not an exaggeration, I used to say it somewhat in jest, but it's taking about two people to replace every baby boomer that retires due to that baby boomer work ethic and commitment and devotion to the job. And I think largely driven by what you said a moment ago is there are a lot of minimalists out there, and the boomers weren't that. It's increasing the challenges of finding people. You lose a boomer, you got to find two to replace them. And there are people that are angry whenever I say that, and they're just going to have to be angry. The jury's in on that.
Truth's the truth, right?
The truth's the truth. So I'm going to jump around here because I'm watching our time here. It's Saturday afternoon at 4 p.m. What are you most likely to be doing?
Taking a nap.
That's my answer, too.
I have a little farm in edge of Florida, Graceville, Florida. And we're in town. I got a little house in the woods back there, and I got some cows. And I'll go down there Friday afternoon, and I'll piddle around, and I'll spend the night down there. And then I'll stay Saturday morning, and I'll mess with my cows and bush hog, and just got some trees. And then about four, you said 4 o'clock. So I'm telling you, I work all morning. I'll go home after lunch, and you take me a nap by 4 o'clock.
That's pretty much the same with me. I've got a favorite chair. I'm in my favorite chair. I've got some mindless thing on the TV, and I'm taking a nap. That's great. It's number nine, you've just won the lottery for $500 million. What's the first thing you're buying?
Let me say this. This is the most difficult question you sent me, because I've asked friends, what would you buy? Ask all my kids. Cam, I don't need a darn thing. I don't mean that ugly, but you said buy something. my wife said, we'll get out of debt. Well, you said, but I don't know. I really, I don't mean it's ugly. I've been so blessed in life. I deserve, but I don't really need a thing. Now, I'll take the $500 million, trust me, but I don't know anything I'd buy, any land, but I don't know anything I really want. Don't need anything more.
I'd love 2,000-3,000 acres on the Alabama River bottom myself.
That'd be me too.
Yeah. So the other side of that question is, what's the first organization you're donating money to?
I would say the Cancer and All the Time. Cancer Society, which affects so many families. And my wife and I were the chairman and co-chairman of the Alzheimer's Walk here in Dothan a few years back. And her mother was affected by Alzheimer's, aunts, and a lot of my friends are affected by Alzheimer's. So it'd be Cancer and Alzheimer's Associations.
Real quick, we're running up to the end. Your favorite vacation destination?
Florence, Italy. I've been 3 times. I've been a few places, and if you Florence, Italy is my favorite place.
Good answer. Alan, it's been a treat getting to know you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Cam.
How can people find you if they want to learn more about your company?
www.dsisecurity.com.
www.dsisecurity.com. Folks, it'll be in the podcast notes. Go there to find them. Thank you again, Alan. We're going to break. We'll be right back with segment 5. Herson Services Corp is a diverse specialty contractor that's changing how people think about general contractors. Herson Services Corp has experts in industrial and general construction, disaster recovery, infrastructure, and mechanical. They offer the latest in industry technology, turnkey project management services, and custom project solutions. Herson Services Corp has 5 offices across the Southeast to meet you anywhere your project demands. Find them at hersonservices.com. We're back. You're listening to What's Working. Thanks so much, Alan, for a really interesting and, I thought, sincere conversation. I really enjoyed that. Alan's a likable guy. As I talk to him on the other side of that Zoom call, I can see part of why he's successful. And folks, one of the things that he said that really leapt out to me, that I can relate all too well to, was this fear of failure. And I've got it bad too. I think we all do in some form or another. He has now a 3-generation family business. And if it weren't for that fear of failure, that his generation, him and his children, likely wouldn't be employed there. And that fear of failure is something that I think anybody that faces difficult decisions, particularly business owners, business leaders more than others, at least that's what I can attest to, can relate to that fear of failure and what to do. I think fear of failure and doubt are often hand in hand. I don't know what to do. I'm afraid to fail and I don't know what to do. I doubt my capabilities. I doubt my next move, etc. I think they're integrally related. And it reminds me of a conversation that we had on this show with Tom Shea. Tom is a Navy SEAL. And at the time that we interviewed him, I think he held the record for the Navy SEAL that entered into SEAL training the most number of times. I think it took him 5 tries or something like that to get through. And in talking to him and in the interview of the show, it's a great show, great interview with Tom. He said at some point when he was going through that SEAL training, he had, and I'll make something up, some sort of extraordinarily arduous situation that he was having to push through during Hell Week. He had a 100-pound pack on him, and he had to march or walk or something, 100 miles, I don't know, the extraordinary things that they put these people through in the freezing cold, soaking wet. And he had to change his mindset from thinking, I've got to go 100 miles, because that's almost an overwhelming thought, particularly under those circumstances, in those conditions, as he was feeling, as tired as he was, as cold as he was, and instead say, I need to move an inch. He was exhausted, no sleep, and I need to move an inch. And then he moved an inch, and he said, I need to move another inch. That 100-mile journey is overwhelming. It will cause you to quit, but you can move an inch. You can move an inch. and it's right in front of you. And I think that's a way, and this is something I struggle with, frankly, of dealing with the doubt, dealing with the fear of not knowing exactly what to do and where to, how to move forward. And it reminds me, I'm in storytelling mood now, if you can't tell, of another story, and that was when I was in college. I was on the rowing team in college at Tulane. And one time we had a sports psychologist, come visit the team. The sports psychologist spent most of his time with the baseball team, but he was curious about rowing and came and spent some time with the team and sat down with us and told us a lesson that I've never forgotten, and that is you break the job down into immediate tasks. So what is the task at hand? We want to win the rowing race. It's a mile and a half, a mile and a quarter. It's brutal in that boat. We want to win the race. But when we think about winning the race, we can think about all the obstacles that may prevent us from winning the race. When we think in that boat about, I need to take one more stroke, a hard one, another stroke, a hard one, another stroke, a hard one, and break it down into manageable components, then we become more competitive. And not looking at the full range, but looking at the next task, which is much more easily managed. So when I come up with these fears of doubt, and I would suspect he did too, Alan did too, you break it down into what's right in front of you that you know that you can do, and you do it well. A small step. I need to make this phone call with this next client a good one, so I need to prepare for it. I know how to prepare for it. I'm going to put a piece of paper in front of me and write out my thoughts. Small steps, which makes the larger come true in time. Fear of failure is something we all face. At least everybody that I talk to on this show, I think, has some sense of fear of failure, something we can all relate to. Anyway, that'll wrap us up for this week, everybody. I hope you've had a good week. I hope the week upcoming is a good one for you, too. Well, find us online and reach out to me, cam@cammarston.com. Let me know your thoughts. Have a good week, everybody. Thanks for listening. As you likely know, this show originates as a radio show broadcast across the state of Alabama, and it continues to grow in both radio listeners and market. After it's formatted for radio, we then turn it into this podcast. Please share it with those you think would find it interesting and subscribe to the podcast on my YouTube page where you can leave messages and your thoughts and your comments, and I'll certainly get back in touch. Finally, if you're a fan of the show, please offer a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can find my book called What Works on Amazon.com. In it, I highlight the top 10 ideas from the first 200 episodes of the show. Mind you, they're not the top 10 best episodes, they're the top 10 best ideas. Many times the same ideas are brought up again and again by different guests, and we dig into those ideas in such a way that they'll be easily applicable for your business. Simply go to Amazon and enter my name, and you'll find What Works as well as my other books. Chapter titles include How to Find a Niche, Innovation, Building Teams, and so forth. To learn more about the workshops and seminars I offer, go to cammarston.com. There you can view clips of my work, view workshop titles, view my reviews, case studies, customer lists. It's all there. If you'd like a free copy of one of the chapters of my book, enter your email address at the bottom of the homepage at cammarston.com. And from that site, you can email me directly. I always love to hear from you. You'll also find me on social media. Find Cam Marston on all the social media platforms, and you may need to enter the numeral 1. There's one other Cam Marston out there, and that numeral 1 distinguishes me from him from time to time. So if you're unsure if it's me or not, enter that numeral 1 after my name, and it should do the trick. On a more personal and less professional side, I record weekly commentaries that air across Alabama on Alabama Public Radio twice each day on Fridays called Keeping It Real. They've won statewide and national awards. They're simple observations on the world as it goes on around me, and they're only a few minutes long. They're a passion. You can find them on the same podcast app you're using to listen into this. Finally, if you're interested in advertising on this podcast or the radio show, reach out. I've worked hard to cultivate a specific listener, and I can tell you all about them, and I have many different options for helping you reach them. Thanks again for listening. We'll have another episode available soon.